Justice Kennedy announces his retirement. Indiana insurers announce their rate increases in Obamacare markets. That, plus the Senate race as a national bellwether, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 29th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement, setting up a showdown in the Senate over timing for replacing him.
Kennedy was considered the key swing vote on several high-profile cases. His replacement, if nominated by Republicans, is expected to shift the balance of the court much further to the right. But Senate Democrats say that replacement should wait until after the midterm elections. They cite Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's decision not to consider President Obama's nominee to replace Justice Antonin Scalia for almost a year in 2016. In a statement, Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly says only that he'll carefully review the qualifications of any nominee.
What should Joe Donnelly do on Justice Kennedy's replacement? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat John Zody, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, in an election year, does Joe Donnelly have to vote for whomever the president nominates?
Joe Donnelly had a pretty bad week. Like, he needed one more thing, one more Supreme Court decision to make, one more way he's going to twist himself in knots here, trying to play both sides and then make a decision. Ultimately, he's got to decide which foot to shoot, really. I mean, he's already got problems with his base because they're unenthusiastic, and they've got to make a decision to vote for him that is based purely on not what they believe and how he has voted in their on the issues they care about most, for the far left. Now he's got to decide, do I side with the president again, and try to save myself, but risk alienating further a base that's already lacks enthusiasm to reelect him, which is why his poll numbers are so bad. So it's going to be an entertaining 60 days, I guess, probably 60 or 90 days, depending on the timing of this, to see what he decides. But there's no upside to any of this for him.
I'm guessing there's a few things in there that you disagree with, John.
Maybe a couple.
Yeah, but is Joe Donnelly in a spot here where, I mean, he voted for Neil Gorsuch? Does he pretty much have to vote for whomever the president nominates?
Well, I think it's all hypotheticals at this point. He's going to look at whoever the nominee ends up being, take a look. He said he'd look at their qualifications, look at their record, and make a decision from there. But as far as the enthusiasm of the base, I think we've seen a record number of candidates on the Democratic side come out this year, record number of volunteers, people being trained, and Joe Donnelly fights for issues that are important to that base, like health care, working families, making sure veterans are taken care of. Those are things Joe Donnelly is focusing on in the Senate. If we want those issues to be carried forward in Congress, in the Senate, we need to reelect Joe Donnelly, get more Democrats in Congress to expand the right to vote, to protect health care, to protect veterans, do all the things that Joe Donnelly's been doing during his time in Congress.
Could this decision that Joe Donnelly has to make be election-defining for him?
I think it could, and it's not for the reason you may be thinking. Joe Donnelly has walked a razor's edge to this point. There's no doubt about that. And I think he's navigated it pretty well. But I think at this point, it's best if Joe Donnelly does exactly what he thinks is right. If they put up a Merrick Garland-type candidate, somebody who's seen as a moderate, then he could go for it. But if they don't, and I think it's 100% chance that they won't, then I think he needs to vote what he thinks is the right thing, because the role of the Senate is to advise and consent. So by making a vote, he will advise. And at this point, with the way things are going and the way the administration is going, it might be a good point for him to just say, look, I'm going to get off of this fine line, and I'm going to do what I think is absolutely right. And that's not to say that I don't believe his rationale for what he's done to this point. But it's getting crazier and crazier, and the more he tries to hew that fine line, the riskier it is for him in his reelection. I think he's better off to just do what he thinks is the right thing, period.
He voted for Neil Gorsuch, but said that what happened to Merrick Garland was wrong. Do you think he goes along with Senate Democratic colleagues in saying, I'm sorry, you have to wait until after the election?
Which, given the rhetoric that we did hear from Mitch McConnell and the, what, how it actually unfolded, is not a bad thing to point to. I mean, that is what happened. I think John's onto something here. He really can't go into this saying, at this point, it seems to me, I'm going to side with the president or I'm going to side with my party. I mean, he has staked his whole reputation and built his whole image on the notion of basically being the kind of umpire that calls him as he sees him, one pitch at a time. And even though I agree with John that the likelihood of it being somebody other than the names on the 25 finalist list provided by Heritage Foundation and others that have been vetted by some of the conservative groups that are quite interested in who gets the nod ultimately, even though it's unlikely it would be somebody other than that, I think it makes sense for Joe Donnelly to wait and see there's actually a name and a face attached to it with a reputation on a record. But I would agree, you can't decide now to do anything other than be the independent broker you've tried to be.
I think John's right in that, or John Zodi. We have three Johns.
That's a lot of Johns. John's going to be right today, I promise.
That's right. Yeah. I think what John Zodi said is accurate, that there is enthusiasm among Democrats. There are a large number of Democrats on the ballot in state in races we've not seen before, certainly not these numbers. But that enthusiasm is driven by a national message, which I don't think fits here. And so Donnelly is having to split between running statewide in a state that isn't aligned with the National Democratic Party.
But if Democrats come out to vote, are they not going to vote for Joe? I mean, they're not voting for
Mike. If they come out in record numbers in Greg Porter's district or a Marion County State Rep district or a Marion County State Senate district or Lake County or with other places where we're seeing a lot of activity, we're not seeing a lot in Avon, Indiana.
People who are concerned about this being a referendum, say, on Donald Trump are going to say, gee, I really didn't like the vote on these three issues.
But this is so big, it's almost not a referendum on Donald Trump.
Yeah, this is almost bigger than that. All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the U.S. Senate vote on a replacement for Justice Anthony Kennedy before the midterm elections? A yes or B, no. Last week's question, does Governor Holcomb's action on DCS signal the start of real improvement at the agency? 38% say yes, 62% a little more pessimistic say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana's two Obamacare marketplace insurers announced their proposed rates for 2019, and this week the blame game over those increases began in the Senate race.
Both insurers in the marketplace, CareSource and Celtic, asked for the maximum increases. Hoosiers' plans will increase on average about 5%. Democrats blamed Republicans for the increases, and both insurance companies did cite President Trump and congressional Republicans' efforts as justifications for their proposed rate hikes. But Republican Senate candidate Mike Braun says ballooning rates have been a staple of Obamacare, a program Democratic incumbent Joe Donnelly has steadfastly defended since he first voted for it.
John Zodi, we've talked a lot about this show about how health care will perhaps be won and lost in this election on who wins the messaging war. In this small battle of that larger war, who's winning?
Well, I think the people that are winning are the people who have had health care for the last 8 years because of what Democrats did to pass health care. Now, who's winning the political messaging war? I think increasingly it's the Democrats, because it's been clearly evident for the last 18 months that Republicans in Washington are openly, actively, and transparently sabotaging the Affordable Care Act by not paying helping with the cost-sharing reductions, by shortening the enrollment period, now going after pre-existing conditions. So we would like to be on the side, and we'll continue to be on the side of pregnant women, cancer survivors, people who have had strokes like myself who have pre-existing conditions. This is an important issue, and so we will continue to be on the side of people who believe giving people health care and protecting access to it is what we should be doing. So I think the American people who have health care who didn't have it before are winning, and Democrats are the ones supporting that.
When you have the two insurers say it's because of what President Trump and Republicans are doing that we're asking for these maximum increases, is that hard as a Mike Braun to counteract?
I think what the insurance industry needs is predictability and stability in the market in order to accurately price these products. And that's been very difficult for them to do going back to 2010. Even these two insurers, one increased by 10% and one increased by 2%, so the average was 5. So we see insurers across the country who are starting to kind of figure it out, but they kind of need nothing to happen for a while so that they can figure out who needs to access these exchanges, who are they, and how do they price these products. And I think you're seeing Some companies are getting better at it, and some have been around for longer, and they're just doing a better. So it's kind of a mixed bag. But outside of all that, whether you have insurance and you like it because you didn't have it before, you have your pre-existing condition covered, and that wasn't the case before, and so it's popular with you. I think what you'll see in the Senate race is if you're in that group of people that has a negative opinion of it, because this only impacts 150,000 people out of 6.5 million in the state, right? Because those are only the ones that are on the Obamacare exchanges. Those are only the products being priced in the context of this conversation. But if you're part of that crowd politically trying to assign blame, it's still called Obamacare. If you don't like it and you're still trying to point somewhere, it's still called Obamacare. Joe Donnelly still got up in the convention and defended being the deciding vote to protect it. So I think the political blame right now balances against Democrats.
Well, he defended it for good reason, because he has been part of an action that gave 400,000 more Hoosiers health care who were left out in the cold prior to that. This is a winning issue because you're improving the quality of life of people. Here in Indiana, we are 48th in quality of life. It's time to raise that up.
We've seen sort of the last few months a few different things. Well, first of all, obviously last year you had the Republicans try to repeal it, and it didn't work out. And then you had the administration stop protecting the pre-existing conditions protection because they want the whole law repealed so they can rebuild it entirely. Then you have this with the insurers saying, well, it's Republicans' fault that we're raising your rates. Is that the sign that the tide is starting to turn in favor of Democrats on health care for the first time, at least in this state, in 8 years?
What's the old saying? You don't appreciate someone or something until it's gone. And certainly, initially, people who were getting insurance, yeah, they may have paid more, but they were protected against being dropped if they met a certain cap, or if they had a malady or disease that somehow was outside the protocols that were put forth. And I think those people have grown to appreciate it. And so now, it's a timing game and a messaging game to see who can play the blame game. I mean, actually, I think Mike gave us a nice assessment of what's happened in terms of uncertainty since 2010. And actually, I would say that is the Democratic argument that you articulated, which is, if you're an engineer...
Can you not put it like that?
I have complimented you before on your intellectual honesty, so this is another example. But I think Barack Obama couldn't have said anything better. You want to set up a marketplace where insurance companies know that what they're dealing with, and actually,
and
there was also a federal subsidy, don't forget, that went by the way. So you ticked off some of the things that went bye-bye
right,
with Obamacare, but there were
that.
Federal subsidies. Yeah. So that was actually a bit of a buffer for companies that weren't sure how to read the tea leaves. That's gone. Now
so,
you have new changes.
So Democrats clearly are, that's been a theme across the country. They are touting their health care message. In Indiana, if that's going to go well for Joe Donnelly, if you're a Republican, how do you start to turn that tide back?
Well, I think that's difficult. I think Republicans in Indiana have the advantage of there's a sense that the Affordable Care Act is not all it's cracked up to be. The trouble for the Republicans is that if it was as terrible as they thought it was, then they would have repealed it and we'd be on to something else. And that hasn't happened because they know that it's meaningful to people at some level. And so I think it's a tough call for Mike Braun or any other Republican in Indiana to do anything except what they've done, and that's say we should repeal it, we should replace it. And their track record on that hasn't been very good.
Well, if Mike, as you pointed out, what insurers really need is for nothing to happen, Congress has got the job for that. NBC's national political team this week suggests Indiana's Senate race between incumbent Democrat Joe Donnelly and Republican Mike Braun is a bellwether for the nation.
The opinion piece from the Meet the Press team suggests Indiana's race will be the best indicator for the country's overall political climate. It says that's in part because Joe Donnelly doesn't have the same kind of strong personal brand as other notable Democrats up for re-election this year, like Missouri's Claire McCaskill or West Virginia's Joe Manchin, and because Mike Braun isn't tied to Washington, D.C., able to brand himself as more of an outsider.
John Schwanis, is Indiana's race a bellwether this cycle?
Maybe to a certain extent, although if we go back to the topic we just had a few moments ago, the better bellwether, seemingly, would be if you had a Democrat who was always siding with the quote-unquote Democratic side, and that means on key issues opposite the Trump administration, then you have a clear-cut bellwether about, it's a clear-cut this way or that way. Because of some of the nuances we've talked about this week and in recent weeks, where Joe Donnelly has taken some what he would describe as maverick positions or independent positions, it maybe clouds it, muddies it a little bit. But again, I With everything so fluid, even though we're down now to how many, you said 60 or 90 days, whatever it is, that's an eternity given what we're dealing with in Washington. You know, things can change in D.C. or around the world that could change this race dynamic in a dramatic fashion.
How much will we be able to read in the national mood based on what Hoosiers go to the polls and decide?
I think if you see a large turnout, and you'll know that pretty early because, it'll either be what we've had in the past, which is a crummy turnout, or the polls will be jammed. If you see a large turnout, then you know that it's a good day for the Democrats. But I think until we get to that point, it'll be hard to call. I don't disagree with the bellwether assessment, but I do think that we won't really have a sense for that. But I do think if Donnelly has a, if there's a big turnout, Donnelly will do well. Democrats will do well.
Are the national folks trying to read a little too much into Indiana's race?
Well, you're always going to hear from the national media one thing or another. It's a new story every day. I think what this says, whether the Indiana Senate race is a bellwether, is really a message to people saying, look, there are no other reasons to not be involved and not getting out to vote, not helping someone else get out and vote. So, yes, I think Indiana, this is always one of the three that's mentioned as what's going to happen in North Dakota, West Virginia, or Indiana. But if anything else, all these national stories talking about this being a targeted race is a clear message to anyone who's wondering, why should I get involved? This is a reason. All the things we're talking about on the show today are reasons for people to get up, get involved if you're not already, and get out there and help.
Yeah, if you talk about wanting to build enthusiasm and turnout being a key for Democrats, is this sort of discussion, the idea that this race could help decide the Senate and this race is telling you what the national mood is like, is that helping Joe Donnelly?
I think it's helping both. I mean, for the same reasons on the other side that John Zodi just described, in terms of getting motivated and getting out to volunteer and get involved. But the analysis here wasn't that flattering for Donnelly because they essentially said it's a Trump state. Donnelly does not have the reputation or the name ID or the strong
brand.
Brand of like Claire McCaskill and some of these other battleground states. So they concluded it's almost like having a generic Democrat and a generic Republican, and so we'll see how that works out. And to indicate, and in terms of measuring turnout, I think the one problem with measuring turnout this year is, if you remember, you got to compare apples to apples to the last midterm, which we had the lowest voter turnout in the country. But part of the reason for that was we had no races,
top of the
right?
Yeah, no real top of the ticket.
And so there was really the turnout was tough to.
And we're not running.
It's gonna be tough to
measure. Generally, he's not a generic Democrat. People know him. He's been to every county in the state over the last 4 years doing stuff. People know Joe Donnelly. They don't know Mike Braun. All they know about him is a blue shirt right now.
Now, you can't go throwing stones at blue shirts here with Joe Donnelly. I mean, we're...
That's true. The battle of the
blue
shirts.
We're both rolling up blue shirt sleeves this year.
Joe's wearing his. Americans for Prosperity this week announced it will launch a six-figure ad campaign targeting Joe Donnelly over President Trump's proposed spending cuts.
The ads target vulnerable Democratic senators and two Republican lawmakers over their votes this year for a $1 trillion spending package and against the president's proposal to claw back $15 billion of it.
$4 trillion. That's what Washington will spend this year. So when politicians like Senator Joe Donnelly say they'll cut wasteful spending, they should keep their promise.
The campaign, which launches during next week's recess, will include digital, mail, and radio.
John Katzenberger. Is it hard to get folks to care about spending deals and rescission packages?
Not the people who watch this show.
Well, maybe that's true, but I think it's difficult. This is like using a scalpel when all the rest of politics is using a club from the Fred Flintstone days. It's all about bludgeoning your opponent, and that's unfortunate because I do think nuance matters, and I do think that these kinds of decisions, these kinds of analyses ought to be made by people as they go forward. But in this current atmosphere, this kind of thing is likely to be lost, especially this far out.
Obviously, as an individual issue, I don't think a lot of people are going to the polls saying, well, he didn't vote for this $15 billion rescission package. But does it maybe just add to the... I mean, it's sort of like almost a balance between one side and the other at this point. Is that what they're just adding to?
A balance between... You know, pretty soon we're going to get to the point where minds are pretty much made up. The only question is, will I actually act on my predilection? Either I'm for this candidate or that candidate. The only question is, do I get off my couch and vote? And so you, in terms of the messaging, I think you get to these kinds of spots and, you know, you usually get contorted faces and ominous sounding narration. You could even say that this person salutes the flag and goes to church, but you do it in a way that's like, I can't believe somebody's running for office and doing those things. It becomes just sort of a background noise, and it's the overall impression that there's something wrong. You don't even have to get into detail.
How much are the sort of ads from outside groups as well as the campaigns going to start to be more about, less about trying to change the mind of a voter and more about just getting a certain voter to the poll?
I think right now, I think the undecideds are higher than we think. I think part of the reason for that is whatever public polling we've seen has shown really low intensity for Joe Donnelly. Mike Braun's got some work to do to get his name ID up as kind of an outsider, kind of a newcomer who's not been a career guy here. But you layer these messages on top of each other, and it's the voter you're trying to reach ultimately isn't like us who are like paying attention to this all the time, right? It's the one that you what's the message you've layered in that finally breaks through? Is it on spending? Is it on
healthcare?
Is it on healthcare or the Supreme Court pick?
Yeah.
So there's gonna be a lot of pivot points here.
I want to ask about the idea of undecideds, though, because this theoretically gets to that a little bit. How many undecideds are there still at this point in this race?
I think there are quite a few undecideds, and I think things that independent voters look for, and quite frankly, Hoosiers, we want to know that government's working, that our pocketbook is balanced. This issue about fiscal responsibility is such a load from Washington. It's a load of Washington speak. You have people running ads against people in Indiana like Joe Donnelly saying that he's not fiscally responsible or he didn't do this. A quote from a Republican member of the House of Representatives last year, well, the debt's a really good thing to talk about when Democrats are in power, but it really doesn't matter to us when we're in power. They just passed a tax bill that is going to blow the debt out of the sky, which it's already starting to do. We are seeing this, the rescission package, again, complaining that someone voted against a rescission package that would have gutted the children's health insurance program. That's what that rescission package was about.
It wouldn't have had that much of a difference one way or the other.
But there are a lot of other things it would have done too, Brandon. So we've got to talk about this false narrative that comes from Republicans saying that they're the fiscally responsible ones. And time and time again, we see the deficit and the debt blow up under their leadership, and now they're trying to pin it on somebody else.
But unless the Democratic equivalent of the Koch brothers steps to the plate and does a commensurate media buy with the same messaging you just described,
Hoosiers
you only hear one message.
Hoosiers are more discerning than that because they know that people who are fiscally responsible are going to use it and talk about it through their own
voters.
If they
were more discerning, they'd probably not be on the
side of voters. But in Indiana, you've got to expect a voter to then split how they think about these things for Republicans, because at the state house they have done all those things. They have lived within the means and balanced the budget and we have the number one state government in the country. So now you have to almost expect them to go, all right, well, not those Republicans, this Democrat and those Republicans. I mean, it's a heck of a somersault. Yeah.
You can't get away from the fact that in Washington the debt is exploding right now. It is. There's no.
But Republicans here are branded on this.
John, I want to ask you one thing before we close out this topic, which was you talked about what is that issue that sort of breaks through to grab voters, whether it's to bring them to the polls or to change their mind. If there is between now and then one issue that does come to the fore, which one do you think it is?
That will motivate people to go to the polls or stay away from the polls?
Yeah.
I would suspect that health care will be a big part of it, and I think that it will be a visceral reaction to the budgetary challenges and or something that President Trump does.
Yeah. All right. Well, finally, some bittersweet news. John Katzenberger first appeared on Indiana Week in Review in 1995 and became a permanent panelist in 2000. And this is his final appearance. John's got a new job, Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy. And while we're all very excited for him, we're also a little sad, as that new position means he'll be leaving his seat here. John, it'll be hard to imagine the show without you. We appreciate everything you've given to Indiana Week in Review over the years.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm trying to remember and recognize who those people were. Do you recognize them, John?
Ever since I stopped using that black hair coloring, I hardly can recognize either one of us.
It's been a pleasure and a privilege to be a part of the show, and I'm forever grateful for Jim to ask me to be on many years ago, to the panel, to you for keeping me on when the transition was made, and certainly to people who watch the show. I've been astounded time and time again by the attention that it's brought for me and the impact that it's had on me and on the career. So I'm very grateful for that. I'll be sorry next week, I'm sure, when the time comes to tape the show, and I won't be coming down here for the first time in a long time. But I am very grateful for the opportunity to join the fray with the Nature Conservancy, and I look forward to the challenge there.
Thanks again, John, and we look forward to seeing the work you do there. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat John Zody, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and for the last time, political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.